Podcast of the cinema.
You're Alonzo Duralde. You are the reviews editor at The Wrap.
Film reviews editor.
What'd I say?
Reviews editor.
Film reviews editor at The Wrap. I'm Dave White. I'm a film reviewer at The Wrap.
Yes.
Which equals you're my boss. Yeah.
Yeah. No one believes that.
This is our podcast about films.
Mm-hmm.
We're film critics. We're married to each other.
Yes. All this is true.
We're 10 years going.
On the podcast.
On the podcast.
Yeah.
We're two meals going into the casserole. There'll be a third.
Yes.
Third meal. I would eat it again right now.
It's a pretty great casserole.
Posted a picture of it on Instagram.
Dave made hot dish last night.
No. I made a very specifically Texas thing.
Yes.
King Ranch casserole.
Yes.
Why is it called King Ranch casserole? You would have to go look that up. All I know is that it's like tortilla, chicken,
cheese
and sauce sort of lasagna-ish.
Yeah.
Real nice.
Very tasty.
They don't photograph well, those casseroles.
Yeah, no.
They look like big mounds of meh.
Yeah. It's like biscuits and gravy.
Right. You want to eat it.
Yeah. Unless you are like, I mean, we know some professional, you know, food stylists. They can figure out how to make this
stuff. They can figure out a way to make it.
Photogenic,
yeah.
But woo.
Oh, the link I sent friends last night was from Texas Monthly Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And even their, like, pretty version
tarted
of it.
Up.
Yeah. Looks like a big melted cheese orange
slab of blob.
Brown slab. Yeah. What do you say that after Labor Day, because we're kind of on a roll here with doing this now on Monday afternoons.
Mm.
But we used to do it on Sunday afternoons.
We did.
And we got in the habit over the pandemic of doing it just whenever we want.
Also
and,
true.
And although it is still the pandemic, we could maybe try to go back to Sunday afternoons if we gave it the old, you know, super try.
I mean, we could, but here's the thing.
What?
During the pandemic, we started having these Tuesday Zoom calls with my siblings.
Tuesday.
Did I say Tuesday?
You said Tuesday Zoom
Sunday.
Calls.
Sunday Zoom calls with my siblings, which is that, believe me, that's a massive troop movement. I'm the youngest of seven.
Right.
And we are on various time zones and continents in the whole nine yards.
Yes.
But every Sunday afternoon, LA time, we have a Zoom call. And we've been doing it quite consistently now for,
I don't think that should get in the way, though.
Well, just that's a thing that now happens on a regular basis on Sunday.
I understand.
Very often on Sunday.
Yeah, they haven't stopped.
No, yeah, that's the thing. We're all vaccinated and moving about
they
the cabin
quit.
Some
they
of more
quit
freely
doing
than before.
It.
We're still doing it.
The rest of you Zoom people letting things fall by the wayside. Yeah. Not this family.
No. We're enjoying it too much. So that's still happening on Sundays. We do a show called Linoleum Nights every Sunday morning for our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
And very frequently, especially now that we're interacting again, we have a Sunday dinner. People, some
friends
come over
for Sunday dinner. I know, but I for years I was in the wonderful, zone of recording this podcast and cooking dinner at the same time. So I felt like I was getting two things accomplished at once.
I see.
And now I feel like I'm getting one thing accomplished and then the next day I have to do this other thing all over again.
Well,
I like the old ways. I'm a traditionalist, I think, as you know.
I'll take it under advisement. We'll see if we can make that work. I'm not against it. I just feel like our Sundays are kind of packed right
now. They're not that packed. Packed with naps.
Well, well, they should be.
Yeah. Work, work, work. You got Saturday off. What more do you want?
I ain't your boss.
Having said all that, I'm not unhappy doing this podcast right now, this afternoon, on a Monday at 4 p.m. because it's the middle of July and it is an overcast, cool day outside.
I know, it's a miracle.
Blowing my mind. Yeah. I figured I'd be sweating my while we sat here, but I was not going to say that.
Also, today I gave you a little extra time to catch up on a movie that I wanted to talk about.
Right. Why don't we just talk about that right now?
Okay. It's a documentary called Playing with Sharks that is now streaming on the, the Nat Geo part of Disney Plus.
It premiered at Sundance. Probably woulda, coulda, shoulda gone to a movie theater, but then Disney Plus picked it up and...
Yeah, one would like to think, but I mean... Yeah, I never know how this stuff works with nature documentaries, but National Geographic acquired it. It's now on Disney Plus, and it is about Valerie Taylor, and she and her husband Ron were among the 20th century's leading underwater photographers. They were both skin divers. They were both very, acclaimed, prize-winning skin divers and photographers.
Yeah.
And their big break came in a little movie called Jaws, where they did like the additional shark photography. They have their own credit card at the end of the movie.
Right. That was their big push. But what happened was they worked on a documentary earlier than
called Blue Water, White Death.
Called Blue Water, White Death. Peter Benchley was a big fan of it. He was a fan of theirs.
Yes.
He wrote the book. He's obsessed with sharks, just like they are. He wrote the book, Jaws, sent them the galley, and was like, they think they want to make this a movie too. What do you think? Valerie Taylor says, oh yeah, this should be a movie. Now, here's the funny thing. Valerie Taylor spends her whole life advocating for the conservation and humane treatment, a.k.a. leave them alone, of sharks.
You see in the film where she is kind of a shark whisperer.
Yeah.
You know, she can get these shots, you know, that nobody else can because she figures out how to, like, train, quote unquote, a shark to go exactly where she wants it to so she can get it with the sun behind it and the whole thing.
She even says, you can teach a shark to do a trick faster than you can teach a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so you know, their entire career builds up to the, you know, Jaws, their big Hollywood break. And then they spend the rest of their careers, along with Peter Benchley, trying to undo the bad PR they gave sharks in that movie.
I want to stop you right there. Because they didn't do anything wrong. Peter Benchley didn't do anything wrong by writing the book. They didn't do anything wrong by participating in the film as underwater real shark photographers. Steven Spielberg didn't do anything wrong by making Jaws. Everyone participated in a piece of fiction about a shark that is so big it doesn't even exist. Okay.
Right.
It's a magical monster shark in this film. They even had to use a little person in the cage scenes to make the real shark that they had on camera look bigger.
Look more like the artificial
shark. Look like the artificial 25-foot long mechanical shark.
Right.
So they were clearly, all of them, working in the realm of this is fantastical. This is not real. This is fiction. People, being dumb, refuse to listen to scientists. Perhaps you've heard about this.
It's a thing.
Yeah. So marine biologists are like, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, great whites, 15 feet if they're really big, you know. And so Jaws comes out, worldwide smash hit. People are, scared of sharks like they're afraid of showers after Psycho. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, all the shark experts of the world, Valerie Taylor and Ron Taylor and all the other marine biologists out in the world are saying, wait, that was a story. In real life, there are like 400 species of sharks. Half a dozen of them are possibly dangerous to you, a human. Most of the ones you will ever, if you ever encounter one.
Right.
It is almost certain that it's not one that wants to eat you. If they see you and you're agitated, they will come up to you and they will bump you. And then they will attach their teeth to you to see what you are. Because they don't have any way to touch. And once they put their teeth in you once, they're like, no, that doesn't taste good to me. I'm not into that. Bye. And she even says, Valerie Taylor says in the documentary, but nobody listens.
Yeah.
Nobody listens when we tell them this. So I don't want people involved in fiction to be held accountable for the audience reaction to that fiction. They created a story, a very good story, about a fantastical monster. And in real life, if anyone was ever paying attention in, you know, biology or animals class in elementary school or whatever the hell it is they teach you, where they teach you about the animals of the world and what they do, then you would come away with that information, the right information that you would need. And you wouldn't need Valerie Taylor running around the world now, writing letters, begging countries to ban things like shark hunting contests and stuff like that, which is clearly nonsense. She shouldn't have to do this. People should listen to scientists.
Right. But at the same time, I think people have always been nervous about sharks because, you know, face full of teeth and all. And it's not like Jaws.
Well, I'm not getting near one.
Yeah. And but Jaws isn't Godzilla.
I don't want everybody shooting them and harpooning them and making shark fin soup out of them.
No. Look, I'm on her side with this. But at the same time, I can understand the panic that sets in because it's not like this is Godzilla and you don't see a Godzilla anywhere. You see a shark. You don't see that shark, but you see a shark, you know. And so, of course, you think, oh, it's going to chomp me. I must kill it first.
I solve this problem by not going into places where sharks might chomp me.
Hmm.
For example... any beach. You won't catch me out soul surfing.
See, that's another one.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is a gorgeous doc. There is something to be said about documentaries about people who have been shooting their own footage their entire lives.
Right.
We'll be getting to another one in this episode, in fact. It does kind of provide this wealth of archival material.
Right.
So it's not just a bunch of dry talking head interviews or still photographs.
It's not that at all. Yeah. The footage is fantastic. Some of it is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
The there's a sequence where she's quite young. She and her husband, Ron Taylor, are trying to figure out how they can be in a pack of sharks. Mm. And they realize that, again, a shark will come up to you and bump you before it tries to eat you to see what you do. And she said, so we just took things down with us to bump them back really hard and make them respect us as part of the pack. They had no idea that this would work. Yeah, they didn't know this was going to work. She actually said, she gets out of the cage, she's like, well, I guess I could die now. But then she's like, but I didn't care. I was like, I needed to find out. Like, she's alive. She has the curiosity that you must have to study something like this. And she's fearless. And so is her husband. He has since passed away. Mm-hmm. This is a very cool documentary. It's from Sally Aitken, who is a longtime documentary filmmaker.
Yes.
And if you go to Disney Plus to watch this, what it put on the coming up next for me was something called Shark Beach with Chris Hemsworth.
Huh.
She also made Shark Beach with Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
Apparently, Chris Hemsworth has taken up this mission as well.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. And so, because, I mean, you know, Sally Aitken has been around forever and ever and ever. But, you know, no one listens to old people.
You mean Valerie Taylor?
Who did I say?
You said Sally Aitken.
Sally Aitken. No, Sally Aitken is not old. No,
Valerie Taylor
is very old now. But no one listens to old people. No. And she even said no one listened to her when she was younger either. Yeah.
They might
listen to Chris Hemsworth. And so you see him like underwater, looking at sharks, hanging out with them and everything. Yeah.
Even, like the old newsreel footage of her like as a champion, you know, undersea diver. And they're like, oh, and check out the bathing suit.
Oh, my. Yeah. You will.
Oh, the 50s.
All the Mad Men, everything. She had to endure all of that.
Yeah.
Look at this blonde beauty. What's she doing with all these sharks around her? Yeah, it's
cavorting in Neptune's middle.
Like you see these things that are real from the past, and you think, this is like an SNL sketch. They're like, I know you're a scientist, but what a pretty lady. Yeah. Like, it's so bizarre.
It's like a Simpsons joke. Yeah. It's like, no, that all this was the world.
Oh, and it was the world until
10 minutes
Well,
ago.
It still is the world. Sorry. It's still the
in
world.
In many ways, yes, you're right.
This is a good movie.
Yeah.
You should watch it.
You should. I'm glad you did.
Now, you saw a couple things I did not.
Uh-huh.
You saw Val.
Yes.
Pig.
Yes.
And Snake Eyes.
Yes.
So in order from crap to good, give me the rundown.
Okay.
I'm probably eventually going to see Pig.
I think you should.
I don't care about the Val Kilmer documentary. Should I care about the Val Kilmer documentary? I'm certainly not going to watch a G.I. Joe movie.
Well,
I did my time with a G.I. Joe movie. I think I've seen at least one or two of them.
Yeah, the crap is Snake Eyes. It is directed by Robert Schwentke, who has done a lot of, let's call them indifferent action movies. They're just not ones that you, if you saw them, you barely remember it. He directed Red and R.I.P.D. And Allegiant and Insurgents.
All right. Great.
And Flight Plan.
Cool.
So, yeah, this is this really listless origin story for Snake Eyes. And I am not...
What's it about?
Well, okay, so
tell me some kind of plot.
So young Snake Eyes sees his father being murdered in a safe house.
This is Henry Golding.
Well, he's not Henry Golding.
He's not Henry Golding yet.
Child Snake Eyes.
He's Child Snake Eyes.
Sees his father being murdered in a safe house by some...
Lil
Snake Eyes. Lil Snakey. being murdered by a goon who, like, before, you know, tells the father, like, you know, roll the dice, and, you know, if you win, you live, and if you... die, you lose. And of course he rolls Snake Eyes, so he gets killed, and kid goes running off into the woods. Next time we see him, he is Henry Golding, and he is beating the crap out of people in, like, you know, underground fight clubby stuff. And this dude is like, I want you in the Yakuza, and if you join me, I will lead you to the man who killed your father.
All right.
So he joins the Yakuza, but he goes to L.A., and then very quickly, the first time he's asked to kill somebody, he's like, no, I'm not going to kill this guy. I'm going to help him escape instead. And turns out the guy that he helps escape is this dude named Tommy, who's actually the heir to this big, you know, Japanese clan, blah, blah, blah. And then Cobra shows up, and who's a double crosser, and will Snake Eyes go through the tests to learn how to be the ultimate ninja warrior?
All right.
And, This is another movie that has Iko Uwais and doesn't do anything with him, which, stop it, Hollywood.
Don't put people from The Raid in your movie if you're not going to let them do raidy things.
Exactly. Let him raid.
Right.
All the action sequences are just like cut, 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 and shaky cam, and not interesting, and nothing lands. The plotting is dull. You know, the casting is fine. I mean, like, Henry Golding's
really cool.
Henry Golding's really cool. And, you know, if you haven't seen Monsoon yet, go check that out on Netflix. It's this great queer indie he was in a couple of years ago. But, yeah, this movie just is a lot of nothing. And I think even if you're a G.I. Joe person, you're going to be sort of like, you know, there's nothing in this movie that is as cool as the Winter Ninja's mountain fortress invasion in one of the G.I. Joe films. Which is the only Snake Eyes thing I even remember from any of the ones that I've seen. But anyway, it's nothing. Then we have Val, which...
You know, from Val.
From Val, yes. No, not that Val, not the Daria Val. Val Kilmer's documentary. It is not unlike Kid 90, the recent Soleil Moon Frye documentary, in that... It's about people who have access to sort of early video technology and like grew
did
up.
Did Val Kilmer follow himself around with a camera?
He did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He had.
Why?
Because like he and his two brothers would like make their own little movies and stuff when they were growing up in
really?
Chatsworth. Yeah. So he just like had the camera with him.
He's from Chatsworth?
He's from Chatsworth.
No idea.
He had the camera with him all the time. And it's that sweet spot of like early portable video technology,
right?
But before the internet, when everybody got really self-conscious about being on camera,
right?
So, you know, you get to see like backstage at his first Broadway show with Sean Penn and Kevin Bacon mooning the camera, you know. You get to see like him, you know, and his wife Joanne Wally Kilmer, and you know,
are they still married?
They are not. They got divorced right after The Doors because apparently he was so plunged into it 24/7.
Oh, I see.
And he talked about this in the movie. Like, that's what ended their marriage, was his, like, sort of maniacal devotion to being Jim Morrison all the time.
You never hear people say, oh, yeah, this was all my fault.
Well, that's the thing about this movie. It is a mix of really interesting revelations and really sort of frank discussions of things.
Right.
And then also sort of, like, actory BS, you know. But what's poignant about it, of course, is that, you know, Val Kilmer's had throat cancer and now can only speak through like a box in his throat.
Oh, I did not know about that.
So the movie's actually narrated by his son Jack, who is a talented actor in his own right.
When did this happen?
In the last couple of years.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you'll recall he was touring doing the Mark Twain.
Okay, now I want to see this.
He was doing the Mark Twain show.
Yeah.
Because he had, like, written this script about Mark Twain and Mary Baker Eddy because he grew up as a Christian Scientist.
I knew about that.
And, you know, like he talks about how he had this huge sprawling amount of land in New Mexico that he wanted to turn into, like, an artist colony and he wanted to leave to his children. And he makes the painful decision to sell that land to be able to make that movie. Only to then have throat cancer and now not be able to be in that movie.
Right.
I mean, it's a heartbreaking story. And it is, like I said, a lot of it's very frank and personal, but then some of it's like, okay, you know.
Okay, but now I have to know, is he okay?
I mean, it's...
Because that's what... anytime I hear about someone having a horrible experience, I'm just like, wait, are they okay?
I mean, it's debilitating. You see him, like, he does a lot of, like, autograph shows now and stuff. And, like, he goes to this con in London or something and has to, like, lie down because he gets exhausted.
Oh, wow.
You know.
All right, now, you've convinced me. Okay. Now I have to watch this.
Well, it drops on Amazon Prime.
I don't care
Prime.
How much actory nonsense there is. Okay. I mean, actors... You just deal with that.
I know.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually direct it himself the way Soleil Moon Frye did, but I'm sure he had a heavy hand in deciding what went in and what didn't, you know. Like early on he talks about, you know, being in London and how when he was making Top Secret, which was his first movie, and like going to see this play that really blew him away that Joanne Whalley was in, and like being just enchanted with her and really respecting it. And at one point he goes, you know, they were making serious theater and I was doing fluff. And I'm like, hey,
Well,
Top Secret is
fluff.
Pretty great though.
Fun.
Yes,
but it's fluff.
But it's the kind of thing that drives me nuts.
Fluff is valuable.
It's like how when Barbara Streisand took forever to acknowledge the fact that What's Up, Doc might be of some value and that she was good in it.
Right.
Like, Val Kilmer's really good in Top Secret. Like, for a first film, that's an amazing performance. And it's so hard to do comedy well.
Right.
And I know that all the actors want to wear the hair shirt and, be King Lear all the time.
Uh-huh.
But, like, comedy is hard. And if you do it well, then you should feel as accomplished as you did doing King Lear. If you're remotely interested in Val Kilmer, it is a very fascinating look at his life, and there's a lot of heartbreak in it. And I would often forget that he wasn't narrating. Like, his son Jack sounds so much like him that it's, you know,
he's an actor as well.
He's not. Yeah, I've seen him in a few things. He was in Palo Alto. He was in Stanford Prison Experiment, and
Everybody was in Stanford Prison.
I know we were in Stanford Prison Experiment. he has impressed me already as an actor. So I'm looking forward to seeing what else he does. But he does the narration so well that every so often they will cut back to Val Kilmer like talking through the box. It was like, oh right, that's not him doing that. Okay, yeah, all right.
Right.
So it's worth a look. It's worth checking out. The best of the three is Pig, which is being a little oversold. It's a first-time filmmaker.
Michael Sarnowski, he is not a first-time filmmaker.
Isn't he?
It might be his first feature.
It's his first feature, I believe.
Okay.
But it is Nicolas Cage playing a recluse, a truffle hunter who lives out in the woods in the Pacific Northwest. One night, his truffle hunting pig is stolen from him. And so he...
Get in a garden.
She's
responsible.
It's kind of the gourmet John Wick in a way. So he gets his one remaining human contact is this guy played by Alex Wolff, who is his restaurant connection, who he sells the truffles to, and he makes him drive him into Portland to go hunting around. The Alex Wolff character realizes in doing so that Nicolas Cage in an earlier life before running off to the woods was this greatly esteemed chef in Portland. And so everywhere when they go to restaurants, it was like, when they realize who he is, there is an amazing scene, with a kind of pretentious chef who once worked for Nicolas Cage's character.
Right.
Played by an actor named David Nell, which interestingly enough, last night for Deck the Hallmark, I was watching one of my favorite made-for-TV movies, a 1980 film called A Christmas Without Snow.
Uh-huh.
And David Nell plays the teenage son of the pastor played by James Cromwell.
That's funny.
So that was just a weird connection. But anyway, you find out, basically over the course of the film, you find out why Nicolas Cage, left the city, left, his successful job. You encounter this other guy who's kind of a restaurant supplier who does bad things, and you find out why about that. He's played by Adam Arkin, who's really good. So it's basically about two adult men with very refined palates and terrible coping mechanisms.
Oh.
But it's beautifully done, and it is, it takes you on a journey. I certainly did not know where I was going with these characters or how things were going to wind up. And Cage is terrific, and Cage can be terrific when he feels like it. And I think maybe even is often terrific in movies that don't deserve him.
I think that's quite often the case.
Yeah. But I think, he's found something that merits his efforts. And Christy and I were talking about how it would be a good pairing with First Cow in a lot of ways. Not just the Pacific Northwestness of it all,
right,
but the sort of what it has to say about food and how and why we prepare it and what we get out of it, and about, access to resources and things like that. It's a cool movie. You should check it out.
I will catch up to it. Honestly, I hadn't really heard anything about it up until a couple days before you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I'm
In your bubble.
I'm in a bubble. I like to just not have to participate in pre-release anticipation and excitement. Or any excitement.
Yeah.
Ever. It's excitement is exhausting.
You don't have to be excited. You're supposed to be informed, Dave White.
I'm informed. I'm informed as much as I need to be to go do the job I need to do.
Uh-huh.
When it's time to go see something, I inform myself as much as I need to about the thing I'm going to see. Then I see it. Then I inform myself of the stuff that I need to know about it after.
Uh-huh.
You see.
Well, you're excited about the new Apichatpong Virasethagun movie.
That's different.
Uh-huh.
He is my king.
Fanboy.
And Tilda Swinton is my queen. And they're working together.
Yes.
They brought me a beautiful gift for 2021. I guess Neon is putting that out sometime later in the year.
I believe so, yes. Neon is also putting out Pig.
I even watched the trailer.
Ooh.
And you know I don't do that.
What?
I made me want to go watch Syndromes in a Century again.
Well, you're always in that mood.
In fact, let's just call it right now. That's my DVD pick of the week.
Is it even in print?
I don't know. You'll find it if you need it. Apichatpong Virasethagun's Syndromes in a Century. I have a feeling from watching the trailer for Memoria that we're going to be seeing stuff in Memoria that he has referenced before in Syndromes. So, there's my DVD pick of the week. Syndromes and a Century.
Well, lucky you.
From the filmmaker, Apichatpong Virasethagun.
All the come-latelys who've never seen his movies before are going to be writing about this and that, and you'll be like, well, really, it's all goes back to Syndromes and a Century.
I like the way that you... put on a fancy cigarette voice.
You're in luck. It is the DVD is in print. Miraculously.
Great. I'm in luck. No, everyone else is in luck. I do. I'm going to see Pig.
Okay.
I'll catch up.
Good.
I got to catch up on that. I got to catch up on I Carry You With Me.
Yes, yeah. You do. And Val.
And now Val.
Yeah.
I'm already behind. It's only Monday.
God, get with it, Dave White.
We watched the new M. Night Shyamalan film.
Yes.
Called Old.
Also featuring Alex Wolff.
It's about a beach that makes you get old.
Yes.
And that's in the trailer. And I did see the trailer for Old because I've been going to the movies.
Yes.
Since vaccination. And they show you a heck of a lot of trailers.
They're so excited to have someone to show them to.
Yeah. This stars Gael Garcia Bernal, Vicky Creeps.
I'm not sure.
She's from Luxembourg.
Yes.
And I don't know how to say her last name. And I've looked up interviews. And remember that time when Marion Cotillard and Matthias Schenerz were being interviewed for a movie, and they kept intentionally screwing around with how you say his name. And they even asked her, how do you say his name? And she's like, I don't know. That's how I feel right now about Vicky Creeps. I'm just going to say it like that until someone tells me otherwise.
Vicky Creeps.
Is anyone in Luxembourg listening to this podcast? Is it possible? There is a country with 600,000 people in it.
Surely one of them.
Someone is one of you listening.
We want to hear from you.
Tell us the name of your most famous exported human being.
Yes.
Rufus Sewell is in this. Alex Wolff is in this. Thomasin McKenzie is in this.
Abby
Lee. Yep. Nikki Amuka-Bird. Ken Leung. Aaron Pierre.
Kathleen Chalfant.
And Beth Davids. Kathleen Chalfant. Folks,
yeah,
are in this movie. All right. I will explain what happens.
But not too much.
No, I would never.
Okay.
This is M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
You think I'm going to give away the thing?
I don't know.
No, I'm not giving away the thing.
I don't.
I respect him too much.
Fascinating.
I respect him in his twisty ways.
Yay.
Too much. All right. Gael Garcia Bernal. Vicky K. And their kids. Two little kids.
Yeah.
Go on a vacation to a remote tropical
paradise.
Paradisey sandals family resort. They get there and they are immediately served drinks.
Custom cocktails.
That are like elaborate and theatrical in their presentation. And they say, we fixed you these drinks based on your food choices on your booking, blah, blah, blah questionnaire. That's your first clue. Something weird's going on. Then you find out, this is all with like in the first 10 minutes. Then you find out that Gael Garcia Bernal and Vicky K, their marriage is love on the rocks.
Yes. And not the kind on the beach that makes you old.
They're fixing to get a separation and they want to wait until after the nice family vacation to tell the kids. They want to give the kids one last memory of a family that is together.
Yeah. Mind you, they still have loud arguments yeah. during this trip in front of the children, which kind of blows the whole premise. But whatever.
When mommy and daddy are fighting all the time, I'll tell you what you know. As a child, you know that something is amiss.
Yeah. Yeah. And the kids clearly get it, too.
Right. Like
you see them acting out in various ways.
So then the manager of the hotel comes to them while they're eating dinner one night and says, hey.
We don't tell everybody.
We don't tell just anybody about this, but we liked you right when we saw you. And we want to let you know that there's a special cove that you can't get to unless we give you the directions. And it's a beautiful tranquility zone.
Which come
here are the directions, and we'll have someone drive you to the little canyon that you walk through, and they'll drop you off, and then you'll go.
Come to think of it, isn't the whole premise of Itumama Tambien trying to find a secret beach with Gael Garcia Bernal?
Kinda, yeah. So anyway. They're like, ooh, we're special, and we want to take the kids to the special place. So they go. When they get there...
Well, they're not even the only ones in the shuttle.
Right. They get there, and there's other folks there, so they have to kind of share the special cove with all these strangers.
Yeah.
All of whom have various idiosyncrasies. And if you put them all together, you would look at them and say, oh, this is the plot of a murder mystery.
Kind of, yeah. This is an Agatha Christie
someone
gathering.
Here is gonna be the killer or whatever.
Yeah, or the werewolf,
or the perhaps a werewolf. And then the children begin to age. Like one day they're six.
No, not one day.
Sorry. 1 minute they're six. An hour later, they're 12, and you're like. This is curiouser and curiouser.
And no one can leave the beach because if you try and go back through the canyon,
you black out.
You black out and you wake up and you're on the sand again.
They never really explain that part.
They don't explain
do
a
they?
Lot.
Yeah,
of
they
this.
Don't.
You're just supposed to go with it.
So everyone begins to age and everyone begins to unravel. And everybody begins to fight and try to escape and they can't. And. People begin to die, and that's all I'm going to tell you. Now, here's the thing. Do you have anything else plot-wise that you think we need to share before?
Not really.
Okay. I am of two minds about this film. I've had several days to think about it.
Okay.
On the one hand... I think this is super dumb.
Yes.
And badly written in terms of the things that everyone says to each other.
Yes.
Kind of from start to finish.
Oh, the dialogue is awful in this movie. People are constantly giving each other the most clumsy exposition
yeah.
and announcing themselves and their intentions and whatever.
And then... comes the secret Uh-huh. Right, because you know there's a secret.
Yeah.
And here's what I will say about the secret that is not a spoiler. If it had been presented to me in an entirely different way, I might have found it kind of thrilling.
Sure.
But it wasn't presented to me in a wild way. It was presented in the way that an old movie with a mystery at its core, an old B movie with a mystery at its core, would tell you in the last 5 minutes, and here's what happened.
Well, it's the end of Psycho. You know, like we always talk, like Shyamalan, his fans talk about like how Hitchcockian he is, but and maybe yes, at his best he can be, but he's also like bad Hitchcock, and bad Hitchcock is the end of Psycho when the psychiatrist comes out and explains everything for 5 minutes.
So that part of me is constantly irritated.
Yes.
But then there's this other part of me that keeps wanting to cheer him on, Mr. Shyamalan. Here's why. He's adapting a French graphic novel that I've never heard of, which is fine. It's not an original script, but he adapted it. And cool. Here's what it's not. It ain't a franchise that already exists. It's not based on a toy or a theme park ride, or a mozzarella stick, or anything else.
He tried that before, and we got The Last Airbender.
Sure, but that's not what this is.
No.
And for the most part, he doesn't do that kind of thing. In general, he goes his own way. He gets people to pony up the money for the films he wants to make, and I like it. So, I also like the first, again, in spite of the dialogue, I like the first 8/10 of this as a miserable visual story, because no one's happy. Everyone's upset. People are freaking out. The camera is in weird places all the time. It's like someone's face is close up in the back. Someone else is in the background doing something that is potentially horrifying. And I like being caught. I like being pushed off my balance in the visual way like that, which is really what happens here. So there's a lot to like, except also at the same time, there's a lot not to like. I'm conflicted.
I will grant you there are some interesting compositions in the film. The way that the camera is set up and where people are placed within the frame. But this is so dopey. I mean, there are
but dopey's not a problem for me.
There are so many metaphors that he leaves on the table.
I know.
You know, like, well, this is what this movie could be about or might want to be approaching or is perhaps meaning to say about how we deal with aging and blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't really satisfactorily come up with anything about any of them. It is the surprise ending is not only badly presented, it's also badly resolved in terms of how the characters deal with it.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of filmmakers out there who are doing original material better than he's doing it. And I bet you that there are a lot of the ones who are out there doing the franchise stuff that, because they don't have the sixth sense in their pocket, don't get as many chances to do original material. Like the studios are running scared, and it's only somebody like Shyamalan who has a track record. And no matter how many times he's bobbled it since his Glory days, he keeps getting more chances to mess up and to, like, you know, make dumb movies like this. I think this movie is just generally idiotic and boring, and it's terribly written, and it doesn't have any interest in digging into what its high concept is actually about or what it might say about human beings.
I mean, yeah.
Well, sure, but...
But also...
I mean, there is a... Even if you're hating his movies, which I frequently am...
You guys, it's a bad movie.
It is fascinating to watch them unspool, because I will say this. He's always hitting for the back fences.
Yeah.
He's not playing it safe. But oh my God, like after Glass...
Is it a bad movie I love? Could it be a bad movie I love?
Could it be a good bad movie? Maybe. Maybe it's a good bad movie.
I was entertained for like a major chunk. But it was always nagging at me like, well, this is
The kind of movie where like somebody's first line of dialogue is, I have a calcium deficiency. And you know that Chekhov's gun is going to come up again later.
Except...
And then when it does...
Not in the way you think it's going to.
No, not in a way that would happen on Earth.
You could just chew those little chocolates every day.
Yes.
Those calcium chocolates.
They've made it so easy for you.
You don't need to get... No one needs to get osteoporosis.
No.
Take your little calcium chocolates.
Also, have you heard dairy is delicious?
It is, but it'll also make you...
I know, not everybody can process it. I understand. But for that, they make...
It will turn you into Fartzilla what it will do.
That's what lactate is for.
Yeah. Not always.
All right, you have given your DVD pick of the week.
Yes, I have.
Mine is Lizzie Borden's Working Girls, which just came out on Blu-ray from Criterion. And that's very exciting because Working Girls has been... inaccessible on home video for a very long time. Like when I worked at Tower Video in Nashville, Tennessee in 1988,
We
had a VHS copy, and that's the last time I've ever held one in my hands.
Yeah.
it's exciting people get to see it. Lizzie Borden, of course, made, you know, the essential Born in Flames. This is a film that is set over the course of one day, a woman in New York who works at what is essentially a very high-class brothel.
Yes.
And it is not a prurient film. It is not an erotic film. It is a workplace drama. It is about the people who work there. It is about the clients. It's about the lady who runs the place and her sort of like chipper managerial style that can also be very no-nonsense. And it just sort of strips away any element of like male gaze or fantasy. And just, this is a movie about working women who are working. And it's a great movie and I'm glad that people finally get another chance to see it.
Got one letter.
Okay.
From Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve.
He says, your listeners have heard you tell tale of the wicked group chats amongst your circle of gays. Assuming there are multiple writers in the group, are there any threads worthy of selling to a studio as the next Zola? Dr. Steve, the answer is no.
No. They would basically have to go into a vault until everyone who is being talked about in these threads is dead. Like a nice nin did.
But here's the thing. Almost none of the time are we talking about anything incendiary or scandalous.
Narrative.
Yeah. Like, we say hideous things to each other to make each other laugh.
Yes.
That we would never say to anyone else. But that's what all little group chats do.
Yeah. There's a great deal of judging going on because that's what group chats are for.
We spend a lot of time talking about like eating and dumb television that we're watching.
True. That also plays a major role.
That's really what those, I mean, that's, I'm tearing the lid off it right now.
You guys.
So yeah, the wickedness that you reference is really just the, you know, the kind of hideous things you say to each other just to get a laugh out of
your closest friends.
Yeah.
But that no one else needs to
that
see.
No one else ever is ever going to, yeah.
Speaking of eating, we do
we like to eat, so subscribe to our Patreon.
That's not how I was going to go with this, but I'll take it.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. You go to that URL, and you learn the different levels of subscription that there are so that you can get things such as Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife, which is a show we do where we take a movie and we talk about it in depth, professionally, adding to the critical discourse.
Oh, always.
For like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
LKTV, where we talk about television programs. Ted Lasso, for example.
Physical.
We're just talking now about Ted Lasso. I think we're going to watch Woodstock 99 this week.
We need to do that, yes.
We still need to get around to...
For a friend of the show, Dave Holmes, if no other reason.
We still need to get around to watching Soccer Mom Madam.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's waiting for us.
Then there's Linoleum Knife and Fork, where I have, after like 4 weeks of just talking about a lot of not much, I'm finally going to share the King Ranch casserole recipe with everybody. Because I finally made something. I'll tell you what, you get vaccinated, the last thing you think about is cooking.
Yeah.
You think, time for a restaurant.
Restaurants are back on the menu, as it were.
It's a podcast that's all about food. Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Yes.
Then there's Linoleum Nights, where we drop the clean podcast rule that we gave ourselves 10 years ago, and we use all the rampant profanity that normally populates our day.
Yes.
And we talk about any subject that we feel like talking about. Originally, I remember when we first started Linoleum Nights, it was going to be the, you know, after dark. Religion, politics, sex, you name it. And sometimes it's those things. And sometimes it's just like whatever what have we been thinking about this week? Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of where we talk about music more than anything else. I mean, not that we talk about music more than any other subject.
Right.
But it is the podcast where if we're going to talk about music, we talk about it there. All other elements of pop culture, again, politics, religion, sexy times, not our sexy times. You know, that's none of your business.
Exactly. And we have monthly club meetings where we hang out in a Discord
club
room
meeting.
And watch a movie streaming.
We talk about it while we're watching it.
Yeah, all kind of fun things. So
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. That's your advertisement for this episode. What one podcast that people we know do that you really like do you want to recommend this week?
Well, the Schmoes Know, who I will often recommend, check out a show that they do called The Big Thing. It's part of the SEN audio network. And basically it's a daily show every week. It's a weekday show where they talk about film and pop culture and all kinds of other stuff. So, you know, if that's your bag, they're funny, they're interesting, and you should check that out. You should also listen to their podcast that I'm on, Breakfast All Day, Maximum Film. Every Monday, I'm on Deck the Hallmark, talking about non-Hallmark vintage Christmas movies. And hey, speaking of Deck the Hallmark, those guys and I have collaborated on a book that's coming out in September. We're just a couple months away now from the release of I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies, and you can pre-order that now anywhere you buy books. You can go to, you know, bookshop.org or any of the big ones, or, you know, your local bookstore. I'm sure they would love the foot traffic. Walk in and order it there. Make that happen. But
you just walk right in.
Walk right in. So yeah, that's happening. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, you ought to leave us a 5-star review. If you do, we'll read it on the air. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Play, Amazon Music, CastBox, Podbean. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. Thank you, of course, to Blue for our wonderful theme music. Go to bandcamp.com and check out all of his great music, BLEU. And that's it for the week. We'll be back next time with more. Maybe on Sunday, maybe on Monday. Who even knows anymore?
I'm going to push for Sundays.
After Labor Day.
Because I like things. Yeah, okay, sure.
I mean, you said only, after Labor Day.
I did say after Labor Day. I mean, we are going to, at the end of August, the last 2 weeks of August, we're not doing this show at all.
Correct.
The middle of August, we'll be...
We're going to drop
We're going to take 2 weeks vacation, like we live in Europe.
Or something, yes. We're going to drop a big multi-headed episode that
the
we
summer
do.
Summer Super Splash.
The Summer Splash Spectacular, that's like we do every
called.
Year.
It's not called that.
It is called that.
It's called the Summer Super Splash.
I'm the one that posts it, so it's called what I say it's called. And we'll be, and you'll get a taste of LKTV and Linoleum Knife and Fork and even Linoleum Nights.
Yeah.
Minus swears, so you can still listen to it in the car with your kids.
What if we did some swears? Could we get away with that?
I think
people would have to be
people
like
would be upset.
My 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Stop teaching him to say F.
Exactly. We listen in the minivan. They like the theme song.
Does anyone have a minivan anymore?
I don't know.
I think people just have big SUVs.
Probably.
They cart their kids around with.
Yeah, I suppose so.
And the kids are all wearing headphones and playing little games and looking at
their own individual
VeggieTales or whatever.
They'll never know what it's like to take an 8-hour car trip to Florida with comic
with nothing,
books
with
that
nothing
you can't
but
even
a crossword
read after,
puzzle.
You can't even read after the sun goes down. You kids today. All right. Have a good week, everybody. Until next time.
Goodbye.